Three today we have the 14th of March, 1991. We're in the office of Dr. Howard Mermelstein, and this is, I believe, tape four. I'll check that later. I'd like to add my name. I'm Mary A. Harrison, and I'm with the Council of Jewish Women's Oral History, and Gabi Dinman will be taking notes. All right, Howard. One of the things that we talked about, and even though the war is now over, it was just mentioned that there was a war in Saudi. Could you just give us a capsule form of how you perceived what went on in Saudi? And
well, I had been called up in the middle of my residency back in 1950 during the Korean War, and I was an inactive naval reservist.
Now that we know.
Was called temporary duty with the Army and ended up as port surgeon at Incheon. Was evacuated there from there in January of 51 when the Chinese came cascading in, and ended up in Pusan. We went down the Yellow Sea, left the beach on a Japanese manned LST, rough seas for 3 days to get down to Pusan. So I had a similar kind of scary time as the boys had just recently over in the Middle East. The only thing we didn't worry about was poison gas.
Could you comment on the poison gas, please?
Well, that would have been the scariest thing in the world for anybody, because you inhale that and your lungs, I mean your skin, there can be so many ramifications of poor health for the future or immediate death. But we were in the middle of a lot of combat time. But when I ended up down in Pusan, I was there then in my off-duty time.
Now, Howard, this we already have on tape, your history of Pusan.
About the hospital, children.
Everything. We have everything.
Well, then,
I wanted to just have some comments on whether you had any comments to make on what has just occurred in Saudi Arabia.
No more than CNN and everybody else's.
Okay. Also, I wanted to know, ecologically and medically, is there anything there that you felt is unique in that particular region that could have caused, aside from the germ warfare?
Well, I don't think the world has ever seen the kind of oil spill that Saddam loosed on that area. The burning of the oil wells with all its fumes, we don't know what will end up as a ramification of that. Outside of the other ravages of war, it's the same. War is no fun.
Howard, we talked about Admiral Ben Morrell just for a second, because there was evidently there was some real estate that
when I
some apartments. Do you have anything to tell
States,
about him?
Yeah, when I got back to the States, I was assigned to the Naval Air Station in Norfolk. And there was a Ben Morrell housing area.
Okay.
Off the base.
And Howard, I don't mean to interrupt you, but we are, you know, since this is our last tape, I have some very particular questions that I want to ask you, which is a little out of character.
Well, that Ben Morrell housing area is where our pediatric clinic was.
No, we already have on tape.
That's it.
Is there anything else you can discuss that you want to tell us about Admiral Ben Morrell?
No.
Okay.
It's just that he had the.
All right.
Was named after
you
him.
You didn't meet
area.
Him, and
no.
Okay, fine. Could you tell us a little bit about the County Health Department then and now, if you feel that this has some significance?
Yeah.
Okay. Phyllis Sachs, you talked about Phyllis Sachs. Is there anything else that you...
I did?
Yeah, just a little bit. And I wondered whether you wanted to elaborate on Phyllis Sachs. Her name was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You mentioned that you did not belong to clubs. Do you belong to any clubs now?
Now?
Yeah.
We belong to Westmoreland.
Okay. You play golf there, and,
mm-hmm.
and that's out in?
Export.
Export. Okay. Anything to talk about, tell about Harold Cohen and Bill Duncan?
Well, they were. Bill Duncan was a senior resident when I was a medical student. Then, of course, he went into practice with Harold Cohen.
In obstetrics and gynecology.
Obstetrics and gynecology. And when I first went into practice, they were very nice to me, referred me a lot of patients. But there were a lot of other OBs in the area who were equally nice. Dr. Howard Power, Dr. Baroni. At that time, Dr. Moss, who had just gone into practice with someone else, and then he's retired since, with the Moss, Weigel, Schaefer group, exists now. Alan Burl and Brown from the very beginning, those three doctors really supported me tremendously. But we've got a lot of OBs at McGee that I've been friendly with and have worked with very closely, been delivering and been taking care of the kids.
Howard, since you have had this practice for the number of years that you have, you also now have younger colleagues, mm-hmm. one of them being your son-in-law. Can you tell me any major contribution that one of your younger colleagues have made that possibly was different from the approach that you had when you graduated from medical school and you opened your own practice? Is there anything new? Is there anything?
Well, I don't think particularly. Bernie Michaels and I have been very intimately involved with Children's Hospital and with the teaching program at Pitt, so that we were pretty much up to date. You always benefit from younger people around you. Dick Ball joined us and was very competent as a pediatrician. My son-in-law, Paul Dubner, joined us and brought in new thinking. I can't put a finger on it.
Okay.
Specific, and then Lorraine Chesick, 2.5 years ago, joined us again. It's nice to have young people around. And it keeps you reading, and it keeps you current, to be sure that you stay up to date. And there we have.
Okay. Howard, you mentioned about spending some time in Boston. Would you like to tell us a little bit about
that? Well, that's when I was at MIT.
Okay, well, anything?
My undergraduate work was at MIT, which was Cambridge. And I knew the Boston area well. It was a wonderful place to go to school. That was back in the dark ages.
We talked about the Haemophilus influenza type B.
Haemophilus.
I'm sorry, Howard.
Haemophilus
totally.
Influenza B bacteria, HIB. That causes flu meningitis, acute epiglottitis, cellulitis with sepsis, acute pneumonia, can invade anything, even the bone, osteomyelitis. We now have, that's one of our more recent vaccines, and we now give it as early as 2 months of age, and to avoid some of these.
You give that in, you don't give it all at once, do you? You give it in?
Well, it used to be when we gave it at 15 months of age, it was only one injection.
Right.
Now that we give it at 2 months of age, depending on the type vaccine, it's either 2 or 3 doses, 2 months apart, and then a booster at 15 months of age.
Okay. Now, what about measles?
Measles, mumps, and rubella we've been giving since 1963, and we now are giving boosters because in some areas they've had recurrences of measles.
Would you like to comment on that? Because I've been reading about that. There have been
around this area, evidently, we've done a pretty good job in Pittsburgh, and they've been covered very well, so that we really haven't had much of an outbreak of measles around here. The colleges, many other areas of the country, Los Angeles, where they have the people coming up from the border, New York, where there's a mix of people from everywhere, there's where they've had outbreaks. They haven't been covered. Measles have been brought in, and they've had soft spots.
With the World Health Organization, I personally, being very naive about these things, but I would presume, and probably shouldn't, that would be something that...
They've worked on it, and they've tried, but you know, you can take a horse to water, you can't always make him drink. And they've done a good job in getting it out into the world, but... Some people, as I say, if they're worried about a roof over their head, food on their table, clothing on their backs, one of the last things they're going to worry about is getting a shot.
Sure.
Unless it's a shot of whiskey.
Also, acute pneumonia. How?
Well, in my day, we've always had antibiotics.
Okay. And is penicillin the only antibiotic?
No, penicillin, erythromycin, third generation antibiotics, don't know. Anyways.
All right. I'd like to ask you, I usually save this for last, but I'd like to ask you whether you have any unfinished business in your mind.
Not really.
No, nothing else that you would like to?
I'd like to continue to practice the way I'm practicing. Enjoy my wife and children and grandchildren. And do my thing in some of our extracurricular activities, that's all. I enjoy reading.
What do you enjoy reading, Howard?
You name it. I enjoy an occasional round of golf. I enjoy gardening. Sort of going to neutral that way. I can enjoy a lot of things. Just need more time.
Yeah. Now, one other thing that I wanted to ask you, Howard, since we're pretty much peers, when my children were taken to physicians in the early years, and we lived out, and I went to just a general practitioner, there was very little, in my opinion, because I was very active in mental health, emphasis put on discussing children's problems with a physician.
No, it's a very integral part of our practice, developmental problems.
From the very beginning?
From the very beginning. Developmental, okay. Safety, other than just the common cold, the earache, the strep throat, the pneumonia.
But mental health?
Sure. Facilities are much more open to us. Outpatient work is...
You mean today than...
Today.
Okay, that's what I meant, Howard.
Outpatients, and we have many, many outpatient facilities which are available to us.
Such as?
Yeah. Western Psych has many, many programs. Our private pediatric psychiatrists in the area now have staffs where they have psychologists, and they can handle all kinds of developmental problems. Children's Hospital has a developmental clinic now, which is, at one time, was not very effective. Now it's very effective in developmental problems. We have just started in the last couple of years a Down syndrome clinic to give all kinds of support to parents who have Down's children. Our rehab institute in Squirrel Hill does tremendous work, supportive with those who've had their problems with accidents or whatever. And they not only rehab physically, but they've got a teaching unit, a speech unit, an eye unit, an orthopedic unit. It's a well-rounded facility for us to use also.
All right, in the courses that were covered in while you were in school in psychology, do you feel that that you learned as much?
At that particular time?
Yes.
No.
Okay, that's what I
picked it up as I've gone along.
Okay, now in medical school,
they have
I'd
much.
Like to,
now they have much contact with the different, as I, you know, what I just mentioned. Plus, they've got all kinds of outpatient facilities that they can work and watch. As they're going through their training of children's, they get a lot of exposure to mental health problems. Abuse, we've got a clinic in children's which is excellent, setting up for abuse.
And what did you do with, were you able to detect abused children in the very beginning?
I think we missed a lot of them, we still do.
I'd like you to.
Well, we just do.
Why? I mean, I'm curious why.
Well, if it's obvious abuse, fractures, sexual abuse with things that you can see, that you don't miss. You don't know how many kids are having sexual abuse or even physical abuse that doesn't show up, they don't mention, and you don't get it from them or their parents.
Well, you know, there's been a myth, and I'm sure you're aware of it. We know that it's literally a myth that, you know, the Jewish families...
That's not true.
Oh, okay. I'd like you to comment on
Abe that. Tversky can give
you
the ideas
on
this. Yeah, for instance, we always said we had no chronic alcoholics. Abe will tell you that's a myth.
Sure. Just mention who Abe Tversky is,
Abe Tversky,
just for the tape.
is a Hasidic rabbi who became a physician, who became a psychiatrist, who has written I don't know how many books now. One time was head of psychiatry at St. Francis Hospital. Is now, well, he spends all his time at Gateway, which is a rehab. And he now does a lot of talking about the abused Jewish woman. You know, you thought that no one ever beat their wife up if they were Jewish.
Absolutely.
And that's a myth.
Sure. So you feel that there's definitely been progress made.
Absolutely. And it's being made. And a lot more progress has to be made.
Then I have to ask you another thing. What is your opinion of these latchkey children and child daycare centers? And what do you think will ultimately... I mean, I know the data isn't in yet. What do you think will ultimately be the outcome of
child daycare? There's some excellent child daycares where the kids get good exposure.
At what age do you think a child should go?
Well, that varies. It depends on when the family has to have it. You know, some mothers have to go back to work at 2 and 3 months of age of their child, and the kid goes into it at that age. There, you're not doing it for the kitty. You're doing it because, well, you are, because they have to have some care. But as far as the educational aspect and all the rest, they're getting stimulation in some of these daycare areas because they have the right personnel, well-trained, clean. They get their food, they get their stimulation that they need one-on-one, and hopefully go home and have it stimulated by the family. Some, I guess, would get more stimulation this way than they might even get at home. There's some bad and good no matter what.
Are you seeing a change in some? I mean, is there anything in your practice that you're seeing more or less of?
Because we're seeing a lot more fathers in our office than we ever did. Because the mothers are working, and the fathers sometimes have a more flexible schedule. And we see them coming in. Used to be you just saw them Saturday morning.
So that's the upside to this thing, as you see it.
Much more involvement with the fathers.
And the downside to the new?
If I get into that, we'll go for the next number of hours.
You can't capsule that for me? Of what these children, some of the children that are going home alone, are you seeing...
Home alone? I don't like that at all.
Are you seeing anything in your practice that is...
We don't have that many that I know of that go home alone to the way. That, as far as I'm concerned, is a no-no.
To what age? I mean, at what age?
At any age. I don't like to see a high school kid go home and have someone around. So they get in trouble. So many of them.
So the downside is?
The downside is sometimes the loss of family and all that it means.
Okay.
Doesn't have to be at all.
All right. Is there anything else, Howard, that you would like to, that you feel
that
we have?
Covered the water.
I really think we did, and I'm very, very pleased with the interview.
I think we covered the water.
Oh my, I think. Anything, Gabby, that you would like to ask?
I can't think of anything. It's been a pleasure.
It really
is. Do you want to maybe for the tape say how you said we don't inoculate for smallpox anymore because it's been eradicated worldwide? Is it possible the same can happen for measles?
It's too early to say.
Uh-huh. How'd they
nice
do the smallpox? How were they able to do it?
Well, it just became less and less and less available to catch through the world. And the last cases, I think, were in Bangladesh and India, and they finally found out that's where the last cases were. They went in wholesale and just vaccinated everybody. Then it became apparent that there was no smallpox anywhere in the world.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
That was World Health, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
WHO.
Mm.
So that is a possibility, it's just that...
In the future? I would think so.
With the measles?
With anything.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right. It was really a pleasure.
Very good.